This is Greg Olson, inviting you to check out my new Blue Wire podcast, TE1, where I interview tight ends throughout the history of the NFL who have helped revolutionize the position. TE1 is presented by the Chevy Silverado. The Silverado is all about grit. It's strong and dependable, exactly like playing tight end. Just like the incredible players we sit down with on the podcast, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. Strong, advanced, and dependable. Download TE1 today, wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Geno Time Podcast here on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. We are brought to you by Bet Online. My name is Tom Westerholm, Celtics beat writer for Mass Live. I am joined by Nicole Yang of the Boston Globe. So we are recording this on Tuesday after the Celtics dropped Game 1 against the Miami Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. 117-114 in overtime. The Celtics had multiple opportunities to win that one and opted not to. Nicole, what are some of your takeaways?
I mean, I think first you just have to appreciate Bam's block.
Crazy.
At the end of this overtime. I still don't understand how he did it, and I've watched the clip so many times now. It looks like, I mean, again, obviously I'm not a doctor or like a basketball professional, but it like literally looks like he could have broken his wrist.
It looks like his wrist is going to snap off.
Yeah, the force that Tatum, I mean, especially the angle from like behind the backboard where you see Tatum getting up, like it looks like this is like a bunch of the highlights we've seen from Tatum where he just dunks over someone. It looks like Bam's about to get posterized, and instead he somehow forces that ball out of the hoop and out of Tatum's hand and also corrals the loose
ball.
It's so impressive, and I mean everyone talks about how strong Bam is, and I think that shows it because that was as good of a look that you could have asked for if you're the Celtics and Jason Tatum on that play. I just still don't understand how it happened. It was incredible.
It's pretty crazy when you look at some of the still images of the block, because in one of them, you can see Tatum going up to dunk the ball. He jumped like long before Bam jumped. Like he was already high in the air, and then Bam, you know, leapt up and somehow managed to block that still, despite Tatum having a head start. It would have been a crazy play by Tatum, even if Bam hadn't been there, because he blew right by Jimmy Butler, who was guarding him. I mean, it was a really nice play. You know, got right to the rim, had a chance to throw it down, and I mean, it would have been pretty crazy if that game had gone to double overtime on Jason Tatum just blowing by Jimmy and having a huge dunk. But absolutely unbelievable play by Bam. I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, a little prisoner of the moment when I see, I think it was Magic Johnson tweeted, that's like the best block in playoff history. And it's like, well, 4 years ago, LeBron blocked Andre Iguodala at the rim in the game 7 of the finals. So maybe we can calm down a little bit.
It's definitely the best block since that, though.
Yeah, I would agree with that completely. That,
like, it was wild. In terms of like larger takeaways, I mean, the Celtics really just blew it, in my opinion. Like, they really did. And that feels harsh, but heading into the fourth quarter, they had a 14-point lead. Midway through the fourth quarter, they had a 9-point lead. I think with 69 seconds left, they had a 5-point lead. Yeah, like 5 points with a minute left isn't that big of a deal, but I think on that play where Kemba turned it over, it was a shot clock violation. They could have gone up 2 possessions with like 40 seconds left. Like, they were in the driver's seat. The Heat played really well, but I'm more inclined to say that the Celtics sort of like shot themselves in the foot.
You know, you take Jimmy Butler's big three toward the end of regulation, you know, the layup plus the foul in overtime where he, you know, just kind of bodied Tatum, you know, and obviously Bam's block. Like, it's tough for me to like look at those things and say it was entirely the Celtics blowing it.
Yeah, but they shouldn't have had that opportunity.
The Celtics let them back in the game, like 100%. Like, I know it's kind of natural to have a 14-point lead and then start to play really conservative and start to, like, try to milk the clock and all this other stuff. I mean, I don't know the stats on, like, play and prevent offense, but I feel like you lose 100% of the time.
Like, especially against the Heat in the playoffs. Like, what do you, you know what I mean? Like, what do you expect if you're going to give them that opportunity?
No, for sure. And Brad talked about in his post game the transition defense and that big Tyler Hero three that kept the Heat in it. I think if Hero misses that shot, the game's over. I think that brought it back down to a 2-point game after the Celtics had it back up to 5. They had all kinds of opportunities, even if their shots aren't falling, to win this game. If you're the Celtics, I think you can look at this game. Like, I think there's reasons to be encouraged, you know, about the series going forward after this game. But I also think that, like, you have to be self-aware enough to look at this game and be like, yeah, they blew this one. This was one they should have won. And it's the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, you can't afford to blow games.
I guess moving to the beginning of the game, sort of when they looked really good, like they got out to that 12-3 lead and everyone, I feel like the consensus on Twitter was like, oh my God, like, thank you so much, Toronto, for like giving us such a hard fought battle in the second round, because it really prepared us for basically any other opponent in the conference finals, because you'd think that any bucket would be easier to get against the Heat than it would be to get against Toronto. And I think we kind of saw that in the first quarter. Like the Celtics were playing at like their preferred pace. It looks like it was much easier for them to score. Tatum took advantage of Tyler Hero early on. Duncan Robinson picked up two fouls. Like everything seemed to be going their way and they got off to a really good start and they were 10 for 15 from the field, whereas the Heat were 4 of 16.
Also but unsustainable.
That's very true. Maybe it was Miami didn't really show much else on defense yet. And then once they went to their zone, and I mean, that was the whole thing in the Raptors series. Like once they go to the zone, it's like hard for the Celtics to find a bucket. And then once Miami starts going on offense too, like Brad talked about the transition offense. And I feel like that was such a point of emphasis against the Raptors. And you could see the Celtics hustling to get back. And it's like, you have to do this in this series too. Like the Heat push the ball. Like they like to play so fast. And I feel like there wasn't that same effort in getting back. Like they played good defense, but like you could tell that like they weren't like hustling their asses off in the way that they were in the Raptors series to get back.
Yeah, they weren't flying around the way they were in the Raptors series. And if they had flown around the way they did in the Raptors series, they would have won that game. You could just kind of tell. There's something to what you said about everybody talking about how much easier the offense looked. I wonder if they got a little bit complacent based on the fact that Toronto, you know, I think is a better defensive team than Miami, but that isn't to say that Miami's bad. There is some like tendency to let up. And I also think there was some amount of like the Celtics were making shots. If shot making deserts you, everything else has to be solid if you want to maintain the lead, and everything else was not solid for the Celtics tonight. So I think if you're the Celtics, you'd be much more panicked if it wasn't for the fact that you can tell that there's things that are fixable that they can do. You know, like you can try to get back to the way that you were playing in transition, that kind of defense. You can move the ball a little bit more against the zone. You can do those things. You just have to do it. I think the biggest things that needed to be fixed from game one can be fixed. You just have to play harder.
Yeah, and I think they can also integrate other things that we didn't really see that much. Like they didn't.
Oh, do you mean like Jaylen Brown?
I mean, I was talking more of Duncan Robinson had some foul trouble, but like they didn't really pick on Duncan Robinson. They didn't really pick on Tyler Hero. I mean, Tyler Hero, I think, held his ground a bit better than maybe people expected, but that was also because the Celtics sort of left them off the hook. There's definitely holes in the Heat defense that can be exposed, and the Celtics didn't really do a lot of that because they did a lot of ISO ball.
Yeah, they did. Just like some really disastrous offense down the stretch for the Celtics. I mean, I do want to say, like, before we get into all the negative stuff, I think that people are making way too big a deal about Tatum's final shot of regulation, relatively deep three. I literally had no problem with it.
I think that's the shot that you want. I mean, obviously, yeah, 100%. Before it goes in, but you want Tatum taking an ISO three at that point, because as you've seen by game three of the Raptors series, you don't want to leave any time on the clock for the Heat. And of course, like the chances of that exact thing happening are very slim, but like, because it's tied, you might as well just like let Tatum, I mean, he had a great game. Let Tatum have a shot. I mean, he has what, like above 40% chance of making it. I agree. I think I'm totally fine with that.
Well, and like, look, like it's a pretty run of the mill NBA, like end of game shot. Like it's pretty much what everybody does in that exact situation. Like, you know, everybody's like, why didn't Brad call a play? Well, I don't know. Why doesn't anybody call a play in that literal exact situation? It's funny because the reason that you want a shot maker, the reason that you want a guy who can create his own shot and make his own shot is for that exact scenario. The end of game isolation, he gives you a chance to win. Tatum gave them a chance to win. The shot was online. It was just a little short. Like it happens.
Okay, maybe it's the execution. Maybe, yeah, he could have had a bigger step back or something, or maybe he could have done a sidestep. You know, like maybe it's the execution, but the play call, I think, is totally fine.
For
sure. Like down the stretch, though, leading up to that, the play that I had an issue with was when Kemba Walker basically just took the whole shot clock to like literally pulled like a Norm Powell, essentially.
Yeah.
It was the most bizarre thing ever. Like took the entire shot clock just to like dribble it out, like especially
at 9 seconds on the shot clock, I was muttering to myself, what is he doing? And he kept dribbling for 5 more seconds.
like, and he knows better.
Oh, yeah.
If we're going
to criticize. It kind of looked like he just couldn't make up his mind what he wanted to do to Jay Crowder.
I think maybe that has to do with his confidence from just the game, because he didn't have a good night. He made some important shots. Like, he had another great mid-range step back, but like overall, he could not really find an offensive rhythm. So maybe that's something to do with it. But if we're going to criticize like the shot selection in the final minute, that one deserves way more like flack than Tatum's, in my opinion.
100% agree. I don't want to make it sound like I'm making excuses for all of the ISO ball that was happening down the stretch, because it was happening way too much. And Tatum was like a culprit. You know, I thought that Tatum was one of the guys who was bleeding the shot clock like way too deep. And, you know, again, I think that so much of the Celtics offense could just be fixed against the zone by moving the ball a little bit more, just passing it around a little bit more. And I would expect that that will be a big focus of theirs going forward. The Celtics really killed themselves in those last 3 minutes just by dribble, 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 bad shot, dribble, 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 bad shot. And
so I guess now we'll just like go back and forth with just like other observations. One thing that made me laugh was Mark Jones in the third quarter. He was like, the Heat have a mismatch here. And he was talking about Marcus Smart guarding Bam Adebayo. And I was just like, no. Like, and then the funny part was when he said this, Goran Dragic had the ball on the perimeter with Tice guarding him. And so that was the mismatch.
That's the mismatch, yeah.
Goran smartly drove to the basket and got a layup against Tice. But yes. I just was amused by the national broadcast crew, not named Joris Burke, just being like, shorter person on taller person, mismatch. When it's like, if you've seen any players try and post up Marcus Smart, you know this isn't going to end well.
Literally the only guy who can do it is Joel Embiid. And I will also note that Mark Jones, I believe, is my favorite play-by-play guy. So just swing and a miss on that one. Also swing and a miss on that the national broadcast just does not quite get the Time Lord thing. On the topic of Marcus Smart, though, one of the things I'll be interested to watch, you know, Jimmy Butler didn't have like a crazy game, 20 points, 7 for 14 from the field, 5 assists. I wonder if we won't see more Marcus Smart on him next game. I know Jason Tatum got the assignment for the most part, and he was fine, I thought. But I think at the end of the game, you really saw, you know, why Jimmy is kind of a tough matchup for Tatum still, because Tatum, he's put on muscle, but, you know, he's got more to do in terms of, you know, building up his strength. And Jimmy can kind of body him a little bit. Jimmy's big enough and strong enough and powerful enough that he can do that. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some Smart on Jimmy Butler, which, given their history together, would be pretty fun.
In terms of Smart offensively, I was going to ask you. So obviously, like, he was great tonight in terms of like production, but I think something that happens, and maybe it is true with other players, but you just notice it with Smart because he's such a, I don't know if polarizing is the right word, but like such a hot and cold offensive player. Like, when he gets going, he like goes for it. Like, when he is making threes, he likes to take them. And I feel like he took some ill-advised ones in this game. How do you feel about that? I know in the first quarter, he took like 40% of the Celtics shots. And like, that's great when they're going in, but it's like, that's obviously not the distribution the Celtics want. As much as they love and appreciate Marcus Smart, that's just not a sustainable offense for them. So like, what are your thoughts, I guess, on how he handles that, like when he gets hot?
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated because sometimes I think over the years he's gotten better at, he'll take his one or two heat checks and then sort of curtail himself. I think he's gotten better and better at that. Like, yeah, okay, that was a bad shot. I missed that one. Let me take a small step back, because he didn't used to. He used to be pretty sure that all of them were going in. Tonight, I think we saw a couple of pretty bad ones. There was one in transition in the second half where he went to the corner and shot a three with Jaylen wide open under the basket. Afterward, you could see Jaylen kind of like frustrated, and then they went into a timeout and he and Smart appeared to be kind of discussing it, and Jaylen kind of threw up his hands at one point. This isn't like the Celtics are in disarray thing. I just think it was, you know,
Marcus Morris shoving Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, it's not that. It's just, I think it was just Jaylen being like, come on, man, I was wide open. But
also, a few plays before or leading up to that, he came down and had a pull up three and he made it. But Jaylen was like,
right
on the way to the hoop. Like, that would have been I think that would have been the traditional call there.
Yeah. Maybe that's the easiest way to describe Smart's offense, is just non-traditional. I think he's at this point as a shooter, he has earned the right to shoot threes in volume as long as he's not like, you know, 1 for 8 or something like that. Like if he's 1 for 8, he needs to stop. But like you no longer watch Marcus Smart pull up for a three and think, oh boy, that's not going in. You think like, oh yeah, like he's shooting a three. It's like just right. Like a very basic thing now. Even if you don't think it's going to go in, you're like, oh yeah, that was a good shot. There's the classic Smart screen grab of him flipping off the crowd for going, oh no, as he shot a three, and then like he made it, and then he like flipped everyone off, which was hilarious. But like, I mean, that's how he used to be. Like he's come a long ways, and I mean, especially when you think about, I think that one of the big reasons why he only got $52 million over 4 years was because they were afraid that he was never going to be able to shoot. And now the fact that he can shoot in the mid 30% from three, I mean, that's why his contract is such an incredible bargain. But yeah, I guess I would say I don't, you know, on a night like tonight, obviously he took a couple bad ones. I think you kind of like take the good with the bad with him sometimes offensively. You know, he was 9 for 18, 6 for 13 from three. It's a lot of shots. That's a lot of 3-point attempts, but like you go 6 for 13 and you're not too mad about it. Like that's a good number.
I would agree with that. As we saw last series, it could have been 2 for 13 if you're Pascal Siakam.
Just the drive-by shooting at Pascal Siakam.
Something else I was curious for your opinion on is just sort of Kemba's struggles persisting into this series as well. I think in game 6 and 7 of the Toronto series, a lot of his shooting woes were attributed to Nick Nurse deploying like a box and one. Kemba acknowledged that in press conferences, Brad acknowledged it in press conferences. But then yet again, we see today, like he still sort of didn't really find his rhythm. And Chris Forsberg tweeted out in the third quarter, Kemba Walker in his last 11 quarters, he's 8 for 36 from the field, 22.2% field goal percentage, 2 of 18 from 3-point, 11.1 3-point percentage, and he's missed 25 of his last 29 3-pointers overall. Those are really bad numbers for Kemba Walker. Those are bad numbers for anybody, but especially for Kemba Walker. Like what did you make sort of his struggles yet again?
Yeah, I tweeted after the game, in his last 5 games from three, he's 1 for 6, 1 for 6, 1 for 6, 1 for 7, 1 for 9. It's brutal. So I've actually been wondering about this. Kemba is kind of a like, and we knew that coming in, like he's always been kind of streaky. I wonder sometimes, like obviously he had the stretch, you know, at UConn where he, you know, did the whole run to the championship thing, and it was amazing, and it was this like incredible clutch performance, and he's just been labeled this like clutch playoff performer ever since then. The man has not been to the, like, has not played meaningful playoff games for like 8 years. And this whole time, this expectation has been built of him that when he gets to the playoffs, he's going to be cardiac Kemba. Because, oh, well, we all saw it in college for this one stretch. Yes, you've got this one really high profile instance of it, but you don't have any other evidence of it. It's like, I'm not saying that I think that Kemba isn't a clutch performer. I think I think he's risen to the occasion many times in big apes. He had that big shot against Tyler Hero that could have won it if the Celtics could have gotten the stop where Jimmy Butler got the and one. I mean, he was a little bit better late in the game than he was at the beginning. But I do wonder sometimes if there is, you know, if like the expectations that are heaped on him are a little unfair, just because like it's been 8 years since he's been to the playoffs, like, or since he's played real playoff minutes. I think that matters.
I think that's all fair. I still think it's fair to criticize a starting point guard for going, like, he's not even going, I think, a point where it's even like, is he clutch or is he not? It's like, okay, can he get anything going?
Yes, 100%. Yeah, I didn't mean that to come across like I was like trying to excuse it. Like, he's been brutally bad. And I mean, and I think we're really seeing right now how tough, I think down the stretch, we saw how tough it is for Tatum when he's literally the only guy, you know, who's been putting the ball in the hoop on a consistent basis. I mean, Jalen hit his threes tonight, but like he was the only guy who was really scoring, was really creating his own shots. And when Kemba is giving you almost nothing, like they're able to key in on Tatum. They're able to just make his life harder too. Like it has effects up and down the roster. They just miss Gordon Hayward so bad. They just need that extra guy who can dribble, pass, and shoot.
In the first half, in the second quarter, so before things even got like really bad, the Celtics were up 32-20. And on the court, they had Grant Williams, Brad Wanamaker, Semi Ojeleye, Kemba, and Jason Tatum. And then over the course of 2.5 minutes, the Heat got the score to 31-36. So they brought it from 12-5, the Celtics lead.
Yeah.
And not that the Heat even had their starters in. The Heat had their bench players in, like both Jimmy and Bam were on the bench at that point. But I just think that shows, again, the Celtics bench has been sort of not a strength for sure. Though Brad Wanamaker did play very well tonight. I just think they need that one other guy on the court, and that would just alleviate a lot of their issues. What's your prediction? Brad has been so cagey and coy about his status. What's your prediction on Gordon Hayward?
As always, these are uneducated guesses with Gordon, because like nobody knows. From reading the tea leaves, I would bet that we see him in game 3 or maybe game 4, because I know that the NBA has been talking about, you know, having a big break between game 3 and game 4. I think the rumor is that it might be like a 3-day break between games 3 and 4. If that comes out, and obviously that should come out tonight now that the Clippers and Nuggets series is over. If it turns out that it actually is going to be 3 days off, I would be surprised if we saw him before that. 3 days off, like you're almost like you're buying yourself like another half a week there of rehab and workouts and everything. And I know Brad has talked about how Gordon has looked really good in his hard workouts and everything, but like it's going to take some adjustment to get him back into the lineup. So
today marks the 4-week mark since the Celtics made their announcement that he would miss at least 4 weeks. And Brad Stevens has since said on the radio that he thought that 4 weeks might be aggressive. I mean, maybe that was also all sort of gamesmanship and stuff. So who, like you said, who really knows? But I wouldn't be surprised if it's like game 5, just because it is the 4-week mark. I doubt he's going to be available for game 2. Knowing me, I'll say this now and he'll be available for game 2. I just don't see it happening. And I think what's interesting too is, so Brad was asked on the radio apparently. I didn't listen to this. I just saw it on Twitter. But apparently he was asked on the radio about whether he still plans to leave for the birth of his son. And Brad was like, yeah, I really don't know. Brad knows. There's no way Gordon's not telling him if he's leaving the bubble again.
Like, Brad does this sometimes too, where you'll ask him a question about, you know, a player's like status, like, oh yeah, when is he going to be back? And Brad will be like, I honestly haven't even asked the medical staff. And I'm like, you haven't asked the medical staff when Gordon Hayward will be back. Okay, Brad, thank you. Like, just tell us you're not going to tell us, man. Like, we're not as dumb as you think we are, man.
I mean, who knows? I would be shocked if he stays, because I know he did have that time home, but he chose to come back, I think, earlier than he needed to. Also, it's the birth of his first son. I mean, it's the birth of his child regardless, but it's the birth of his first son. He's adamantly said before the bubble that he would 1000% go back. He's been at the birth of all 3 of his daughters. He said it was an easy decision. Again, I'll probably say this and then maybe he stays in the bubble, but like, I just can't see him staying. So I'm really curious to see how it ends up panning out with him, because the wild thing is like the time that he probably would be available is when he would maybe need to leave for the birth. We'll see how it all works out.
Yeah, we're really getting down to it in that way. also, he should go home. I mean, if he decides to stay, I mean, that's his decision. I hope he does. I hope he makes the decision based on what his family and he thinks that he should do, rather than like about like trying to make sure that like the Celtics don't lose a pivotal game 5 or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, right. I hope that's not the reason he sticks around if he decides to stick around.
I agree.
So Grant Williams, 1-for-2 from 3 tonight, continues to just be an absolute sniper of a 3-point shooter. I did think it was interesting. He and Rob basically like split 20 minutes of center time. I don't entirely know what Rob, like what is the right matchup for him at this point. Like, I know we've all been talking about like, oh, it's all matchup based. And for Rob, it's like, I still think that he's got future starter potential and all that stuff. But like in these playoffs, like if he's back to jumping at everything, if he's back to swiping at everything, if he's back to being out of position all the time on the defensive end, like if that's going to be the case, I think it's too early for him at this point. So I definitely get putting Grant in there, even despite the size disadvantage, just because I think generally Grant knows where he's supposed to be, even if he doesn't quite get there in time yet. He knows like what he should be doing. There isn't a whole lot of confusion there.
You mentioned that they both played like 10 or 11 minutes. Actually, Rob got more minutes, but Grant got the more important minutes. Not to pile on your favorite play-by-play guy, Mark Jones, but in the overtime, once Tice fouled out with like 3:30, I think, remaining in the overtime period, Mark Jones was like, oh, well, here comes Robert Williams, probably. You got to guess that, like, he's the guy that'll come in. It's like, nope, that's not going to be the choice here. Again, that's to no fault of Mark Jones. Conventional thought would definitely indicate that Rob would be the choice here. But I think you're exactly right in that, like, if the Heat are going to score against Grant Williams, it's probably because they just beat Grant Williams. Whereas if the Heat are going to score on Robert Williams, it's possible Rob was not even close to the shooter. You know what I mean? Like, it's possible, like, he was, it's also possible he will swat the shot. But I think just that uncertainty creates distrust for Brad to put him in pivotal minutes.
Rob had that one huge block tonight where he swatted Jay Crowder swatted a layup off the backboard so hard that it was basically a pass to a spotting up Jay Crowder. Even when he does something great, like swatting the shot and it stays in bounds and the ball stays in play, it's just like scoots out to a wide open shooter. And I also thought it was funny that everybody lost their minds for a second because Brad put Wanamaker in when Tice initially fouled out. And everybody on Twitter was just like, what is he doing? I don't like this. And then it was for one possession and then Grant came back in. And it was like, all right, well, here we are.
Did you see that Enes Kanter logged one possession, I think?
So I saw that in the box score and I did not remember it occurring.
Actually, Quinn tweeted it out. So now I guess is a good time to plug our Twitter account at GenotimePod. It's run by a listener, actually, Quinn Johnson. And he tweeted out the one play that Kanter was in and it wasn't good. So go check it out on the GenotimePod Twitter account.
Shout out to the new homie, Quinn Johnson.
One last thing, too. Do you think Tatum should have or would have gotten called for a travel on his sort of desperation, like when the Celtics had 2.5 seconds to get the ball? Like, he fell down, but he had possession when he fell down and then he fully got back up. Like, I feel like that would have been a travel.
I think it probably would have been a travel. Okay. Yeah.
The only reason why I brought that up was I feel like people were sort of talking about how, like, oh my God, if that went in, because he got a pretty
deep almost made it. Yeah.
2.5 seconds to like fall down, fully get back up, and then get a shot off. Like, he almost made it, but my thinking was like, that definitely would have been a travel because like he caught the ball, fell down, and then like stood up.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, no, I agree with
it. So.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, we will leave it there. Like Nicole said, make sure everybody who's listening go follow at GenotimePod on Twitter. Feel free to drop us a DM. Let us know what you think. We appreciate you all, and we will talk to you soon.